Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Thursday. It's July 31st. Currently 63 degrees here in Old Town Park City with some patchy smoke and sunny skies. 61 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Thursday, folks. It's time for your Wasatch Back forecast for this Thursday. Get ready for mostly sunny skies and a little smoke and haze back in the sky. You'll notice those smoky skies out there from time to time. As Park City, you'll see those high temperatures climbing into the mid-80s this afternoon. As we go into the Heber Valley, look for high temperatures right around the 90-degree mark for your Thursday afternoon with those smoky, sunny skies expected across the area. As we go into your Friday, you guessed it, more of the same. Lots of sunshine expected out there across the area as high pressure has a firm grip on our forecast here. We're looking at high temperatures in the mid-80s in Park City with highs in the low 90s as you get into the Heber Valley. Moving into the upcoming weekend, if you've got outdoor plans, whether you're going to be camping, hiking, or just in trying to enjoy the weather, it looks like it is going to cooperate with lots of sunshine. We'll see those highs in the mid-80s. We're looking at both Saturday and Sunday in Park City. And high temperatures will climb into the low 90s both Saturday and Sunday in the Heber Valley. Moving into next week, yeah, we've got that high pressure that still will control our forecast. So overall, not expecting much change there. Lots of sunshine expected for you on your Monday with highs still in the mid-80s. In Park City, we'll be in the low 90s for the Heber Valley. And then as we go into your Tuesday and Wednesday, look for lots of sunshine. Park City, high temperatures into the mid-80s for highs. And then in the Heber Valley, we're looking at those highs climbing into the low to mid-90s once again. So it's going to stay hot. It's going to stay primarily dry over the next 7 days. That high pressure anchors itself over the area, keeping us very dry across the region. We'll have some breezy conditions from time to time, but overall, the fire threat will be the primary concern as we have those breezy, dry conditions out there that will lead to that elevated to not critical fire danger as to go throughout the next few days. Of course, we'll keep you updated on your forecast, but for now, hot and dry is the name of the game. That's the way things are shaping up. From the ABC 4 Forecast Center, I'm meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
And on the phone with us now with our weekly trails report, I have Laura Anthony with Mountain Trails Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie, and happy Thursday, Park City. We've got Basin Rec reporting in that the east side of the berm pathway and lower trail side pathways are still under construction until mid next week. So expect to have to be on the street if you're in that neck of the woods. That's kind of out near the North Round Valley Trailhead area. Basin Express it says the pathway on the east side of 224 will be closed from the Blue Roof to Redstone August 5th and 6th for a seal coat. Downhill and grill event at Trailside Bike Park is on Saturday from 3 to 6 p.m. They're going to have food, free food, burgers, hot dogs, drinks, a band, I believe, or at least a DJ, and some just fun rolling at the bike park in Trailside. It looks like Rick from the Mountain Trails team is reporting that Seldon Scene is now open in its entirety. Lower Jenny's is... they'll be doing some work on that for another week or so, and it remains closed. And the Mountain Trails team will also be performing some tread work on Silver Queen this morning. So that trail, probably just keep that out of the repertoire. Mia from Wasatch Trails Foundation is reporting that they have a booth at the Wasatch County Fair Days tonight through Saturday evening. If anyone wants to swing by and say hi and tell them how much they love the Weaver or the Heber Valley trails, that would be great. Other than that, they've got no updates, and that's it for today. Have a great day and stay cool out there.
Okay, Laura, thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.
Stay tuned. Coming up, we'll be checking in with Summit County Councilmember Roger Armstrong. Later on, Park City resident Dave Hanscom is back to his goal of climbing a number of the country's tallest peaks and documenting the bird species he encounters along the way. President of the Wasatch Back League of Women Voters, Monica Schaefer, is joined by Ann Curvin with the Proactive Alliance. They have details on Monday's candidate forum, as well as some other upcoming events that are planned. Then stay tuned for Cool Science Radio. Today's guests include Blaise Aguirre-Iarcas, a vice president and fellow at Google, talking about his new book, What is Intelligence? Lessons from AI about Evolution, Computing, and Minds. Then a conversation with Rich Herbert, a senior AI engineer and Park City resident, talking about AI's practical applications and its role today and in the future. All of that coming up on Cool Science Radio, heard every Thursday from 9 to 10. In local news now, the Colville luxury golf community Wohali may have new financial backing after allegedly laying off much of its workforce. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the resort has defaulted on a multi-million dollar loan.
In an interview with KPCW, Colville Community Development Director Don Sargent says he does not expect the luxury living and golf development in Wohali to go belly up.
It would be absolutely impossible, in my opinion, because there's just too much at stake. You know, other investors would come in and restructure if it got any more challenging. That's exactly what's happened here. A new investor has come in to the picture and is very excited about getting things squared around. Financially with all vendors, all aspects of previous loans, and move forward with the project.
Numerous lawsuits are swirling around Wohali, which is located across Interstate 80 from most of the rest of town. Foreign creditors who filed the largest lawsuit in Utah Business and Chancery Court July 9th want to recoup the rest of a $79.2 million loan they say Wohali has defaulted on. With outstanding interest, they claim the resort owes them $85.4 million. But Sargent says a new financial partner named Jonathan Cox is hoping to put the project back on firm footing. On June 23rd, Cox introduced himself to the Colville City Council as a newcomer to Wohali with over two decades of real estate development experience.
It's going to take us another couple of weeks to get our feet under us, but once we do, I would like the opportunity to provide regular updates. I think that it's important that folks know what's going on up there. It's a large-scale project in any community, really.
KPCW was not able to reach Cox or independently confirm his involvement with the project Wednesday. Efforts to reach Wohali's founding partners, David Boyden, Thomas Catone, and John Kaiser, either directly or through an attorney, were also unsuccessful. Sargent says communities generally want developments they approve to be successful.
Anytime a major developer like this has a challenge in their project, the city should be concerned because that could have ramifications.
Specifically, failed developments can affect tax revenue or infrastructure, but Sargent thinks there is too much potential profit for investors to let Wohali fail long term. The resort has temporarily paused residential construction, but not infrastructure projects it promised the city it would finish. According to Sargent, Wohali has fronted the city money to repair and maintain a secondary reservoir to be paid back with future tax revenue from the resort. It's already built Colville a new sewer line and is currently constructing a sewer pump station. But Wohali's creditors claim there have been widespread layoffs at the resort in recent months, which Sargent says left a bad taste in the community.
So I hope that when they come back to life in terms of reinstituting their infrastructure construction and the resort moving forward, that that can be somehow repaired, because that in a small town that doesn't go over very well.
He confirmed Wohali's golf course is still active. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
The Summit County Council met yesterday, and in the studio I have Councilmember Roger Armstrong. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start with some of the big news of the week. Of course, the county manager Monday approving the amended agreement with Dakota Pacific, a decision now taken away from the county council. The county council already voted to approve this last year. If the public referendum is allowed to go forward, we then have a possible public vote on the referendum in November. And now the county manager unilaterally approved the project. I mean, literally, it's a three-ring circus here. So how has this decision-making process gotten so screwed up? I mean, it's...
Well, the state legislature came in to help. And when they came in to help, they just kind of gutted the county council's ability to steer things where they wanted it to go. Now, they did, to whatever credit is there, the law that they passed, Senate Bill 26, I think, requires, actually just encoded in state code, the development agreement that the county council passed in December, I think it was, or early January. It was December. So we're looking at three things. Number one is the referendum process and the question as to whether the law was applied with the disallowance of certain signatures in that referendum process. That's before Judge Mrazek here in the 3rd District. That hearing is August 18th, I understand. He'll decide whether that law was applied appropriately and whether those signatures were validly disallowed. If he says that the law was misapplied and the signature should count, I think the court clerk and the lieutenant governor has now posted that enough signatures are there to put it on the ballot. So then it begs the question, what's next? If it goes on the ballot and the voters vote, that's one thing. But there's still a backup to that, and that's that Senate Bill 26, which encoded the development agreement. That bill said from now on, that development under these standards that are in the development agreement is no longer a matter of legislative control. It's now simply an administrative act, and the county manager has the ability to make that decision. And his decision is limited. Does it comply with the state code? Does the development agreement that they proposed match what the council approved and what's encoded in the state code? I think there were some changes to it. I think there were some phasing changes to it, but otherwise I think that's where it is. And then there's a third piece that could be challenged. You know, somebody could go in and say, okay, does Senate Bill 26 violate the Constitution in some way? Is it special purpose legislation that shouldn't, for a single party, that shouldn't be applied? That's another decision. And then the third piece of it is the law that allows small incorporations, and Dakota Pacific has already filed to try to get that. So Dakota will have three bites at the apple to get what they want.
Yeah. So the state law, as you mentioned, that allowed this Senate Bill 26. Why not sue the state over Senate Bill 26 like you did with Senate Bill 84 2 years ago?
Because the state Supreme Court created a situation where counties have limited ability to sue the state. The Supreme Court issued a decision in the Hideout matter that said that essentially counties are arms of the state. They're state created, therefore they simply carry out on a local basis what the state wants them to do. And therefore the counties have very limited, if any, ability to have standing to sue the state. So they've sort of shut that door. The Supreme Court has shut that door.
So we have a state-imposed development project now that has no height limitations, no setback requirements. So basically people who live here and pay taxes here have no say in the future of their community.
Local control has been chipped away at and chipped away at and chipped away at by the state legislature. And I think, you know, if it were me, and it is me, I think it's time that the state of Utah, counties and cities start to consider how we go about getting home rule encoded in the state constitution. And that would be a matter of a state referendum to pursue that. And it's one of those issues that it's always bothered me ever since the state has stepped in and started primarily in Kemble Junction, but you'll recall way back when the movie studio, when they were gonna rezone the movie studio or MIDA was gonna take it over. And I think at some point, it's a message that resonates with small counties, large counties, rich counties, poor counties. I think we all want to have the foremost say in what happens in our jurisdictions. We're closest to the residents. We understand what our problems are. When we have somebody from Sandy or West Jordan or someplace else stepping in and saying this is what belongs there, I think it creates a really bad precedent. Yeah. We're not going to be able to change it unless we all link arms together and seek something constitutional.
Yeah, and you know, and I'm being a bit facetious here, but I mean, I gotta ask, I mean, why bother with local government? Maybe we should disband the planning commission, you know? Why have a county council? Maybe just let the state legislature do it all for us. But I mean, you have been in government for a while, and you know, as you mentioned, there is that home rule possibility. But I mean, what else could we do to, again, regain that local planning and control?
I think that's the only thing at this point. You know, my concern is that developers come in, they tap somebody on the shoulder. We've seen it locally here in Park City. We've seen it at the county level. There are fixes in place where they're willing to override what we're saying, and that's troubling. I don't know that we've lost the ability to sue to enforce that, to retain our control, or we haven't filed the right argument to sue. The Supreme Court, that's the most troubling decision, the notion that counties don't have standing to challenge what used to be a matter of course. It used to be spot zoning was not allowed, and now it seems that that's on the table.
Yeah, so where does it end? I mean, should we anticipate that we see something like this next legislative session now that the Colville City Council has voted not to annex a portion of that Cedar Cross property? Or will Senate Bill 26 affect West Hills?
West Hills, you've got the small incorporations available. You've got West Hills coming in with an annexation that's pretty aggressive. I think it will continue to happen. Here's a conversation I had with one of our state senators at the governor's gala. I walked up to him and I said, you know, it looks like there's going to be some resolution on Dakota Pacific. Don't know what that vote is, but it's trending in a certain direction. And I said, so you guys aren't going to have anything to talk about in terms of Summit County in the next legislative session. And his response, without a laugh, was, I'm sure we'll find something. So we are in their sights. They are watching what's happening in Summit County. We are going to face more and more challenges as it relates to East Village and what's being built there with the hotels and everything else that's coming in. Economically, Park City itself is going to face challenges with that. And I think, again, it's time for, this is happening all over the state. It's not just here. And I think it's time for UAC. I'm very disappointed in UAC is the Utah Association of Counties. We pay them money every year, and every year we wind up in the sights, and I don't see UAC lighting any other county's hair on fire to say, you can't do that to a local government. We're missing that opportunity. The Utah League of Cities and Towns turns away when Summit County is affected. And these land use decisions wind up being precedential in terms of how they're going to treat any jurisdiction where they want to override authority. And the notion that, you know, there's a housing crisis and we have to make this happen in those communities, Park City and Summit County have shown that we're paying attention to housing, we're taking steps to build housing. It's a matter of degree. And the notion that, again, laws that were passed recently that says that we can't impose a 20% affordable housing requirement or a 30% or a 50% affordable housing requirement in development agreements where they want to build residential shows that they're not really serious about solving the housing crisis at those lower levels.
So is UAC just part of the good old boys network here?
I don't know that they're part of the good old boys network. I just don't know that they want to take on difficult issues. They want to make nice with the legislators. They want to build those bridges so that they can say that they've got some strength. And they do get some victories. They just don't get the ones where it's really bet the farm for us.
Now, with news that the Kimball Arts Center is moving to Kimball Junction as part of the Dakota Pacific development, does that improve the development that you had voted against?
Well, if by putting Kimball Arts Center in there, they were willing to strip out about 200 units of residential, that would be a really fine development as far as I'm concerned. I think it would actually work. And I don't say that in a glib way. I don't think they're going to do that. I like Kimball Arts Center being there. I think it's at our entryway. It's an opportunity to have an iconic arts organization there and a facility adjacent to transit, where people can actually get on a bus and go into Park City and come back. I had conversations with Mark Stanworth early last year in the process and told him that in terms of the amenities that they put in that development, I would appreciate it if they would consider some sort of a cultural center where we might have an indoor music performance or live stage performance center there. There are opportunities there that I think, again, if the state had not interfered, we probably could have built a better development. But, you know, I think the Kimball there, we are fortunate to have them. I feel bad for Park City. I go back to, you know, 2015, remember the conversations where they had that crazy design that they wanted to build at the existing Kimball, and that got turned down. And so they moved to this place that they're in now that, you know, you need a map to find and GPS to locate where they are. And the delays that happened at the Bonanza Park, I don't think it drove Kimball Junction away at the delay, but it allowed the opportunity to come to fore that Dakota was willing to provide.
Yeah. They actually did spend a few years in that auto parts building.
They did.
That's right. Well, I wanted to ask you about Wahali. Again, this is within the municipality of Colville, but any concern that you hear when you say that, when we hear that, they've run out of money, you know, and they're laying off much of its workforce?
Yeah, I think when you see a project starting to fail, you have to be worried. The Colville City worked on that project for a while. That was going to be, and I think still could be, economically beneficial to Colville. I mean, having, you know, larger homes there with better property tax revenues, and the opportunity to take the kinds of residents that might be living there and upgrade their main street and provide more retail opportunities, higher scale retail opportunities there, enriches the city. So when something like that starts to stumble, I think you wonder, you know, what does it mean? What could it become? Does it just become a municipal golf course? I have no idea. But, you know, we've seen it happen before. Promontory was very close to failure at one point. It had some problems with loans and emerged healthy. I'm hopeful that they'll figure out a way.
Okay, I wanted to mention North Summit Fire. The county council yesterday adopted more new policies for the North Summit Fire District. Fire Chief Ben Nielsen's been kind of a frequent flyer at meetings over the past year. One of the policies is to provide firefighters with body armor when necessary. Is this in response then to the attack we saw in Coeur d'Alene?
I don't think so. I think it's just, you know, if firefighters are called to a variety of situations, they're called to fires, but they're also called to, you know, trauma situations where you need EMS, where you might have an active shooter, you might have others. I think just, you know, where we're living today, you just have to be aware that there are some situations where the peril could be higher. The policy simply says that they've got it there. If they're going into a situation where it might be necessary, to the extent that they can, it should be concealable under their uniform, just not to alarm the public. And if it's an active situation where it's an urgent situation, they're relieved of that responsibility. I called it out just because it was one that, you know, when I saw it, it makes sense, I understand it, but, you know, it's the world we're living in today.
All right. Council Chair Tanya Hansen suggested considering a July recess in the future because the meetings this month tend to be light on duties and information. What do you think?
Devil's in the details always. You know, if we have work to do, we enter into an agreement with staff at the beginning of every year after our retreat, and they come up with a work plan that is going to advance our goals for the year. And if that work plan is sailing along and they don't need council input on that, if there are not applications that the council needs to engage with, then, you know, we meet when we need to meet. We have had, not just this month, but, you know, I think even last month, we've had a series of light meetings. And I don't know if that's reluctance of staff to bring things forward. Things aren't ripe to bring forward yet. A slowdown in planning and at the Planning Commission. I haven't really, you know, it was just a comment yesterday, so we really haven't dug very deep into it.
Okay, anything else you wanted to mention?
Yeah, I just, you know, it's fire season. We had a near miss in the Uintas a couple of days ago, and just an appeal, we've got about a month, month and a half left in a critical period, and then we start to cool off, hopefully, and maybe get wet. Maybe we get a monsoon season. Please be careful. No fireworks, no open fires. If you're working with a grinder, don't do it in an area of dry brush nearby, because we had a fire start over by Rockport a few years ago that was somebody using a grinder. Be smart about what you're using. Be aware about fire, and let's keep the entire community safe, please.
Okay. Summit County Council Member Roger Armstrong, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Leslie. Take care.
Well, once he retired, longtime Park City resident Dave Hanscom set a goal to climb some of the country's tallest peaks and document the birds that he sees along the way. He joins me now in studio to tell us more about this. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Leslie. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, you too. So maybe just start by telling us, our listeners, a little bit about yourself and how you got into both mountaineering and birding.
Okay. Totally separate paths. When the kids were little and we were traveling around a lot, whenever we'd come close to a high point for a particular state, we'd just try to get there, you know, do some hiking. Birding I've been involved with for a long time. Same with the kids, you know, we'd go camping, we'd see birds, and I'd make a note in my little bird book. And so that, in both of those interests have carried on over the years.
All right. So what inspired you to take on what you're calling the 40 over 80 challenge?
How'd you know about that? Well, my goal when I retired, you know, you have to have goals. So I turned 66 and I thought, you know, I should try to get to the high points of all the states. And so 50 high points. And how about 50 birds in every state, too? So, you know, that's kind of round numbers. So I started. I did Mount Rainier first, and I was going to do Denali next. But due to my wife's health issues and the formidable thought of climbing Denali, and goodness knows what happens when you get up there, I decided, okay, 49. So 49 high points of states plus 50 birds in all 50 states was my goal when I retired. As you know, Mary passed away 2 years ago, and I had for about 10 years not been able to do much traveling at all. So I thought, okay, maybe I can still do it, 49 high points and 50 birds. So I started traveling around the country and doing some of the, you know, the easy stuff in the middle of the country. I had already done all the hard ones, you know, Wyoming and Montana, Rainier, of course, and California are some of the harder ones. So I just continued with that. At the end of last year, I had 44 high points in 47 states with 50 birds. The reason only 44 is because I was headed for North Carolina High Point from the north while Hurricane Helene was coming in from the south and totally destroyed the Blue Ridge Parkway and Mount Mitchell in North Carolina. It's in a state park. And they've been closed ever since. So at the end of last year, I thought, I need a new goal because what I have left is easy. So I thought, I woke up in the middle of the night last winter and I thought, 40 after 80, that's kind of a nice round number. I'll bet you I can still do 40 high points after I turned 80. I already had all the ones in the middle of the country. So that meant I had to do some tougher ones. So that's what I'm in the process of doing now.
All right. So how did you choose which 40 peaks to include?
Well, the, quote, harder ones that I had to do are not the hardest ones in the country. So they're kind of the intermediate difficulty. So I started out with Texas early this year and then New Mexico about a month ago. New Mexico high point is 13,000 feet, and I wasn't sure how my 84-year-old body was going to respond to that high elevation, but I felt great. So I thought, I wonder if I could do Colorado again. That's 14,000. I wasn't planning to, so I did that. And when you called me on Monday, I was standing on top of Mount Elbert in Colorado, much to my I don't know about surprise, but relief, maybe. It was, you know, I just was really pleased and grateful, actually, to be there.
Yeah, I bet. So where are you in the journey now? I mean, how many peaks of this?
So I'm going back to New England. Mary's brother passed away. They're going to do a celebration for him at the end of August. So I'm going to try Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, and New York. And then after that, I just need to do Nevada, which I'll do mid to late September. I say I will do, I hope. One never knows when one gets older how one's body is gonna deal with those kinds of things.
So how do you physically and mentally, I guess, prepare for the climbs, especially at the higher elevations?
Yeah, well, you can't really, but living at 7,000 feet really helps. I met people on Elbert on Monday that came from sea level, and I'm thinking, oh, God, how do they do that? They do it because they're younger, I guess. But I do a lot of hiking at the resorts. You know, I'm in around Utah. I did Timpanogos a week or two ago with my son, who was here visiting. That was my test hike for a significantly longer hike than I'd done for a long time. And that worked out okay, so I thought, give Elbert a try.
Wow. So of those 40, any the most challenging at this point?
Probably the most challenging of all those was Elbert, but the ones coming up, Mount Katahdin in Maine is quite a long hike and a fair amount of vertical. Mount Marcy in New York, similar. But it's more distance than you know, it's the highest elevation is only 4,000 feet, so there's plenty of air there to keep me going.
Yeah, and so you're able to do these in a single day, huh?
Yeah, that's, I'm not doing any backpacking anymore, so the ones that I chose are ones that can be done in a day.
Yeah, now along the way you're also documenting the bird species, so how did you kind of come up with that idea?
Goodness only knows. Probably another middle of the night inspiration, but 50 birds in 50 states seemed like a nice round number. But it also has been fun to see different areas of states other than just going to the high point, which in some cases is just a drive-by, like a little monument beside the road someplace. But looking for birds, and that's something I've enjoyed doing here in Utah, and it's a nice extension.
Yeah, how many species then have you identified so far? You're up to 47, I think you said?
I've completed 50 birds or more in 47 states, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so do the types of birds you see vary much by elevation or region?
Yes and yes. In, for example, along the coastal states, if I'm birding along the coast of one of those states, I'll see a totally different set of birds than I do in the mountains. Or typically I look for water, reservoirs, swamps. Birds seem to be attracted more to those, and they're easier to see.
Yeah, so how are you documenting this? I mean, taking photos, taking notes?
There's an app called eBird, and eBird is run by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. It's a worldwide network of people that are reporting bird species that they see. And they've got, millions of people that are involved in this whole project at this point. It's been around for, 20 years, maybe 15 years. And so I use that app, and they keep track of statistics for me so I can see how many birds I've seen in each state or each county in Utah or whatever.
Yeah. So are you climbing solo, or do you always bring somebody along with you?
No, for the most part solo, but I mean, some of the harder ones that I did earlier, back in my youth, when I was only 65 or 70, I would make sure that I was there with other people. My first climb was Rainier, as I mentioned. I did that with my son, Greg, and I've been out with my kids a little bit, but other people as well. But mostly, I've been doing them solo.
Yeah. Any kind of interesting people or stories that you could share?
The very humbling experience when I did Mount Elbert on Monday, some guy passed me with one leg. He had a
prosthetic? A prosthetic?
A prosthetic, thank you. And he went by me and stopped a little beyond me, and we chatted for a little bit, and I was very impressed that he could do that much of a hike with one leg. Then I was coming back down the mountain, and I met another, I presume they're both vets. This guy had two prosthetics, and he had gotten almost to 14,400 feet. So that's pretty amazing.
All right, walking poles, yes or no?
Oh, absolutely. I can't do either up or down without poles anymore. I'm lucky to walk from the bedroom to the bathroom without leaning against the wall these days.
Yeah. So what do you hope to take away from this 40 over 80 project?
Well, it's been a great incentive to keep going. As you get older, it's always tempting to sit on the couch. And I love being outdoors. I love being on top of mountains. Every mountain's a gift these days. So I think, that's really my incentive to keep moving.
And do you plan to publish your experience here?
No. I I don't need to do that.
Okay, but nothing like on Facebook or social media or?
You know, I'm not on social media. That's not my priority in life. I have other things that I'd rather be doing.
Okay, well, you're quite the inspiration, Dave.
Well, thanks.
Good luck, and I think you've probably got, what, another, by this time next year, it'll be complete, huh?
Yeah, so they're saying that Mount Mitchell and the Blue Ridge Parkway are probably going to be closed for the rest of this year. So I'm looking at next spring to do those four down in the southeastern part of the country. They're all right together, so I don't want to fly all the way out there just to do three out of four. I'll wait until it opens up.
Okay. All right. Best of luck.
Thanks
for coming
in. Appreciate it. You bet.
The Wasatch-backed League of Women Voters, along with the Proactive Alliance, are co-hosting a Park City Council and mayoral candidate gathering Monday. In the studio with details on this event, as well as a couple of others, I have the president of the Wasatch-backed League of Women Voters, Monica Schaefer, along with Ann Curvin with the Proactive Alliance. Good morning, ladies. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you so much for the invite.
Yeah, so Monica, as we recently reported, after a dry spell, you've revved up the League of Women Voters here in Summit and Wasatch counties. Any idea how long it had been since we...
It was a couple of years. I think things got a little quiet during the pandemic, and then the leader moved away, and so, yeah, it had been a few years.
Yeah, so are you seeing folks kind of join in? I think it is
Definitely.
A membership-based organization.
It
right?
is a membership-based organization. It's a national and local and statewide organization. So, yes, we are seeing a good core of people and a lot of people who joined and are ready and willing to step up to volunteer for things, but don't necessarily come to all the meetings. So yeah, we've got a good core of people.
All right, so how much are annual dues?
Annual dues run anywhere from 75 is suggested to down to 20. It's a sliding scale, so students and anybody can feel free to join at the $20 a year amount, but 75 is suggested.
All right, and then when and where do you meet?
We meet at the third Tuesday of every month at my house in Pinebrook at 6:30 p.m. And we've sort of developed a structure of having a speaker come in every other month. And then on the alternate months, we have sort of a working meeting where we do some planning and some training and things like that.
Yeah. And my understanding is that the League of Women Voters has always been considered a nonpartisan organization.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep. So we focus on issues. We focus on voter education and voter rights and human rights. And we don't endorse any particular candidate or party.
Okay. Do you do take stand on issues, though?
Definitely.
All right. One of the first events is kind of the reinvigorated group here is the candidate forum happening on Monday. When and where?
So the candidate forum is going to be in the community room at the Park City Library this coming Monday evening at 7:30 p.m.
Okay. And how will the evening work?
So we have invited all eight council candidates and the two mayoral candidates to come give a bit of a informal intro in their own words, and we have laid out sort of a random order for them to speak, and we just invite them to just say in their own words, you know, what are your passions, what are your visions, what differentiates you from the other candidates. And after that, we'd like to just invite the public to engage one-on-one with each candidate on a just very casual individual basis.
Okay, so it won't necessarily be a moderated
forum, not at all,
right?
Yeah.
And will there be an opportunity, though, before you kind of break off one-on-one to have participants or, you know, people who attend to ask questions to the whole group? Or?
We've decided not to do that because we've decided that you already did that very well last week at the candidate forum that you and the Park Record hosted together. And we just wanted to make this very casual and just a more of a one-on-one event. I think the candidates have been very welcoming of the concept of this forum so far. And so I think the community and the candidates are really going to enjoy doing this.
Okay. Anne, you're with the Proactive Alliance. Tell me about this.
Thanks, Leslie. It's a group that formed rather spontaneously late February. We sort of had our first meeting in early March. And it was the result of sort of a negative dialogue that was happening here and everywhere, and we wanted to sort of change that dialogue. We wanted to provide an opportunity for people to come together and talk about what's going on and take positive action. Make positive messages where there has been, I don't know, negativity being slung. Not necessarily in Park City, but we really wanted to focus locally, and that's what we're doing.
All right, so this is a Summit County, Wasatch County, Wasatch Back, bigger than that organization?
It's a good question. We don't have it defined by territory. We really wanted to focus locally. Some of us live here in Park City. Some of us live in the surrounding areas. So we don't really have a zip code. And we will bleed into, you know, local, county, state, and national for various events and purposes.
So is there a national proactive
No,
alliance?
We started this. Oh. We made it up.
Okay. Now, do you meet regularly?
Yes. The core group meets weekly, and we have a speaker meeting once a month, the first Wednesday of the month, and the next one is this is August 6th, and we're hosting Elevate out of Salt Lake City. They're consultants, and three young, very bright, active, worked on the national level for campaigns and so forth, and they're helping in particular Democratic parties to help, again, change the dialogue. My words, not theirs.
Okay, so what the notes say that you're trying to save Utah with a whiteboard and a dream. What does that mean?
That's Elevate.
Okay.
They are so clever. Watch them on Instagram. They hold up sticky notes with the message that, and then another sticky note, and their whole Instagram delivery, which might be 5 or 20 minutes long, is with sticky notes and a whiteboard. They then put the sticky note on a whiteboard.
Oh, so is this a partisan organization?
They're consultants, so.
Oh, I mean your group.
Oh, our group. Yeah. No, not necessarily. No, we're in favor of human rights. We're in favor of inclusivity. We're not in favor of ICE. So we are willing to take a stand, but we welcome everyone.
All right. So anybody can join you?
Absolutely.
And how do they find out more about that?
Through you. And we have a website. We are Proactive Alliance, all jammed together, one big word, .org. And we have a calendar of events and everything. Well, we have a couple of events coming up that require an RSVP because space is limited. But yes, we absolutely welcome everyone, especially for the speakers. And we invite speakers who bring different perspectives, different topics. Our purpose, our mission in large part is to inspire and inform and educate and build community.
All right. So this Wednesday, August 6th, activity with Elevate Utah, when and where is that going to be?
That's at 5:30 at the Kiln, that shared workspace in Kimball Junction. And the doors lock automatically. So if the door is locked, look on our event page to find the phone number to call so we can come and let you in.
Okay. Again, you are asking for RSVPs because you have limited room there. The Proactive Alliance at gmail.com.
For speakers, there doesn't have to be an RSVP.
Okay. All right. And then coming up also in August, Monday the 18th, you've got another, what you're calling a suffragette party?
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen here?
And we're co-sponsoring that with Monica and the League of Women Voters, and we're going to celebrate when women got the right to vote. And it's a party, and we're going to have a costume contest, and it's a celebration. And the costumes are white, and everyone in the community is welcome, and that one does require an RSVP with a small donation.
Hard to believe we're going to be celebrating our 250th anniversary of the country, and women have only had the right to vote for 105 years of that?
Yeah, it is hard to believe.
Oh, wow. Okay. What else is going to be happening here? It sounds like you're looking for sponsors or...
For the party?
Yeah, or for the suffragette party.
Yeah. What else is happening?
We are actually not necessarily looking for sponsors, but we've decided to require a small donation to confirm a reservation. It's going to be an RSVP event because, again, space is limited. It's going to be in the Rotary Park off of Thaden's Canyon Drive from 5 to 8 on, again, Monday, the 18th of August. And so, yeah, so we've decided in lieu of sponsors to just have a small donation entrance just to cover basic costs. We'll have some food, we'll have some games, some outdoor games, cornhole and things like that. And we're going to have some decorate your own suffragette sash. We have some ribbons and some fabric markers and glitter and things like that. And we'd really love, especially young girls, to just enjoy and engage and celebrate the fact that our foremothers have fought the hard fight and finally got the right to vote.
Okay. All right. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I think that's it.
Okay. Monica, Ann, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, thank you, Leslie.
Monica Schaefer, again, the president of the Wasatchback League of Women Voters, and Kirvin with the Proactive Alliance. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Summit County avoided a wildfire in the Uinta Mountains this week. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that ground and air crews extinguished a fire on Tuesday near Mirror Lake Highway that authorities say could have been much worse.
Campers near Meadow Lake in the Uinta Mountains across Notch Mountain from Washington Lake, about 26 miles up Route 150 from Camas, reported a brush fire around 2 p.m. Tuesday. A helicopter and ground crew from the Northern Utah Interagency Fire Center responded.
The fuel moistures are still pretty high, so they did have it contained fairly quickly.
That's Uinta Wasatch Cache National Forest spokesperson KJ Pollock. She says the fire did not grow past a tenth of an acre. Summit County Search and Rescue and a Department of Public Safety helicopter initially mobilized since the distress call from a Garmin device indicated campers were threatened by the fire. The helicopter saw there was no need for evacuation, according to the rescuers, who said the blaze was contained to a few trees. There were about 10 to 15 people camping in the area, according to Summit County Sheriff's Office spokesperson Skylar Talbot. Pollock says the cause is unknown, but that there wasn't lightning reported near Meadow Lake. Forest rangers say campers should fully extinguish campfires and avoid driving on grass brush, which could ignite with heat or sparks. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
And the annual Kimball Arts Festival in Park City will close several roads in Old Town. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has details.
A few areas are already closed for the 56th annual Kimball Arts Festival and more closed Friday. Bob Wells Plaza on Swede Alley and the Brew Pub parking lot closed Wednesday for crews to set up for the festival. Starting at 3 a.m. on Friday, Main Street, Heber Avenue, and Swede Alley will be closed to traffic and parking. Those areas will reopen early Monday morning. Public parking is not allowed on Park Avenue during the three-day event. Park City is encouraging festival attendees to use free public transit to get to Main Street. Buses will be running to Old Town from the Richardson Flat Park and Ride every 10 minutes from Friday to Sunday. Drivers can also park for free and take the bus in from the Park City School District campus and Park City Mountain Village. One lane of Deer Valley Drive will be bus only, limiting traffic to Old Town. Parking in the China Bridge Garage will cost $9 an hour with a maximum fee of $40 during the event. Pickup and drop off is in the South Marsac parking lot next to City Hall. The bike valet is on 7th Street. Friday is Locals Night, where Summit County residents can register to get in free online. A link can be found at kpcw.org.
That's Parker Malatesta reporting. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City at 91.7 and 88.1 FM in Summit County, 91.9 FM in Wasatch County.